A voice enters the song. It delivers one line, then disappears. The drums strike. The bass rolls through the room. A horn appears for less than a second, then falls into an echo so deep it sounds as though the instrument has been thrown down a tunnel. The singer returns as a fragment. One word. Part of a sentence. Then silence. The rhythm continues without him. This is dub. It is not simply reggae without singing. It is not background music. And it is not an unfinished recording. Dub is the art of taking a recorded song apart and rebuilding it inside the mixing studio. The drums become heavier. The bass moves forward. Instruments vanish without warning. Voices appear like memories. Echo and reverb turn small rooms into enormous imaginary spaces. The engineer does not sit quietly behind the musicians. The engineer becomes one of the musicians. This musical revolution began in Jamaica. To understand how it happened, we have to return to Kingston before dub had a name. During the 1950s, recorded music was difficult for many working-class Jamaicans to hear at home. Radios and record players were expensive. Live bands also cost money. Sound systems filled the gap. A sound system was more than a collection of speakers. It was a mobile musical organization. The owner controlled the business. The selector chose the records. The DJ spoke over the music. Engineers built and repaired amplifiers. Crews transported towering speaker boxes into yards, dance halls, empty lots, and community spaces. People gathered around these systems to dance, compete, socialize, and hear music unavailable on Jamaican radio. Early sound system operators played American rhythm and blues records, imported from cities such as New Orleans and Miami. Competition was fierce. Owners searched for rare recordings their rivals did not possess. Some removed labels from records so competitors could not identify them. Others renamed songs and presented them as secret selections. The quality of the equipment mattered as much as the music. A sound with deeper bass, stronger amplifiers, or cleaner speakers held an advantage in a dance. When two systems competed, the crowd decided which one sounded better. This competition encouraged technical experimentation. It also helped create a Jamaican recording industry. As American rhythm and blues changed, Jamaican producers began recording music for local audiences. Ska emerged in the early 1960s. Rocksteady followed during the middle of the decade. Reggae developed near the end of the 1960s. The sound slowed. The bass grew more powerful. The spaces between notes became more important. The rhythm was no longer supporting the song from the background. The rhythm was becoming the main event. Sound system operators wanted exclusive recordings. Producers supplied them with special acetates, known as dub plates. A dub plate was normally a temporary disc cut for a particular sound system. It might contain an unreleased song, an exclusive mix, or a recording altered to mention the sound system by name. The plate gave its owner something no rival possessed. Out of this competitive culture came the practice known as the version. A version was an instrumental or partly instrumental mix of an existing song. The main vocal was removed, reduced, or allowed to appear only in selected places. One famous account places a turning point at Duke Reed's Treasure Isle studio around 1967 or 1968. Sound system operator Rudolph "Ruddy" Redwood reportedly received an acetate on which engineer Byron Smith had left out the lead vocal. Some versions of the story describe it as an accident. Others suggest the decision was deliberate. Redwood played the instrumental recording at a dance. The audience recognized the rhythm. They sang the missing lyrics themselves. A DJ spoke over the open spaces. The reaction showed producers something important. A recording did not need its original singer to hold a crowd. The rhythm had a life of its own. The story survives in several forms, and Jamaican music historians still debate some of its details. Ruddy Redwood was not the only person associated with early versions. King Tubby's hometown hi-fi also became central to the practice. What matters is what followed. Instrumental versions became common on the reverse sides of Jamaican singles. The vocal song appeared on one side. Its rhythm appeared on the other. These records gave DJs room to speak. In Jamaican music, the word DJ carried a different meaning from its usual American use. The selector chose and played the records. The DJ used a microphone to introduce songs, praise the crowd, chant phrases, tell stories, boast, rhyme, and comment on events. This vocal practice became known as toasting. Ural became one of its great early masters. On King Tubby's hometown hi-fi, Ural placed his voice between the lines of familiar songs. He did not need to replace the singer. He responded to the singer. He filled the spaces. He turned a finished recording into a live conversation. Versions and toasting grew together. The more space engineers created, the more freedom DJs received. At the center of this movement stood Osborne Ruddock, the man known as King Tubby. Tubby was born in Kingston in 1941. Before he became famous for music, he worked with electronics. He repaired radios and televisions. He built amplifiers. He understood circuits, signals, filters, wires, and speaker systems. This knowledge gave him a special position in sound system culture. Jamaica's heat, dust, humidity, unstable electrical conditions, and constant movement were hard on audio equipment. Sound system operators needed people who knew how to repair damaged components and improve weak systems. Tubby did more than repair equipment. He modified it. He built powerful amplifiers and developed hometown hi-fi into one of Kingston's most respected sound systems. His technical skill allowed him to create echo and reverb effects during dances. The crowd heard sounds normally associated with a recording studio being produced through a live sound system. Tubby also worked with producer Duke Reed, cutting acetates at Treasure Isle. Once recording sessions were separated across several tracks, Tubby gained access to the individual parts of a song. The bass might occupy one track. The drums and instruments might share another. The vocals might sit on a separate track. A normal engineer combined these elements into a balanced final mix. Tubby saw another possibility. He began removing parts of the song while the tape was running. He dropped the singer out. He brought the bass forward. He allowed the drums to stand alone. He returned a vocal line for a moment, then sent the final words spinning through echo. He pushed horns through filters until they seemed to narrow, rise, and disappear. The mixing desk became a performance instrument. A dub mix was not always planned in advance. The engineer made decisions in real time. Faders moved up and down. Knobs turned. Channels opened and closed. Echo feedback rose until it approached chaos, then stopped before the entire mix collapsed. Two dub mixes made from the same recording did not have to sound alike. One might focus on the bass and drums. Another might emphasize percussion, organ, guitar, or fragments of the singer. The original song became raw material. King Tubby's studio and waterhouse became a laboratory. Producers brought him recordings from other studios. Tubby reshaped them into dubs. His equipment was limited when compared with the large multi-track studios operating in the United States and Europe. The limits did not stop him. They gave him boundaries to work against. He used filters, spring reverb, tape delay, equalization, and the physical controls of the console to create movement and tension. A snare drum might strike once and echo several times. A guitar chord might enter from nowhere. A vocal phrase might become a ghost inside its own song. Tubby also understood the physical force of bass. Tub was designed for large speaker boxes and crowded dances. Its low frequencies were meant to be felt through the body. The bass did not fill every available space. It entered, withdrew, and returned. Silence became part of the rhythm. Tubby worked closely with producer Bunny Stryker Lee, whose recording supplied material for many celebrated mixes. Musicians recorded the original rhythms. Singers added their songs. Tubby then entered the process and rebuilt the recordings for sound systems and record buyers. The Aggravators, Bunny Lee's regular group of session musicians, played on many of these rhythms. Dub changed how listeners understood authorship. The singer remained important. The musicians remained important. The producer remained important. The engineer now stood beside them. As a creative figure, King Tubby was not working alone. Lee Scratch Perry followed a different path into dub. Perry had worked around sound systems and recording studios before establishing himself as an independent producer. He recorded the Wailers during a major stage in their development and created music under names including The Upsetter and The Upsetters, where Tubby often approached sound with the precision of an electronics engineer. Perry approached the studio as a world of imagination, symbolism, rhythm, noise, and performance. His Black Ark studio in Kingston became famous during the 1970s. Black Ark was not a huge commercial facility. Perry worked with a limited number of recording tracks, which forced him to combine, or bounce, several sounds together. He layered percussion, voices, instruments, environmental noises, and effects. He altered the texture of recordings through repeated copying and overdubbing. He used the studio to create dense, unusual atmospheres. Recordings made at Black Ark often sounded as though they belonged to their own physical environment. The room had a personality. The tape had a personality. Even distortion became part of the music. Perry produced major recordings with artists including Max Romeo, Junior Mervin, the Congos, and the Heptones. His dub work carried humor, dread, spirituality, surprise, and controlled disorder. King Tubby and Lee Perry are often presented as the two central pioneers of dub. But the full history includes many more names. Errol Thompson, often known as E.T., developed a powerful mixing style through his work with producer Joe Gibbs. Their African Dub Almighty series became one of the best-known bodies of dub from the 1970s. Herman Chin Loy was among the earliest producers to release full albums centered on instrumental and dub treatments. Clive Chin and Errol Thompson produced Java 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 Java. Clement Coxone Dodd released dub recordings. Connected to Studio One, Keith Hudson produced Pick a Dub, a major album from 1974. Sylvan Morris, Linford Andy Cap Anderson, Prince Jammy, and other engineers also played important roles. The identity of the first true dub album remains disputed. Several important records appeared during 1973. Among them were Herman Chin Loy's Aquarius Dub, Lee Perry's Upsetter's 14 Dub Blackboard Jungle, Clive Chin and Errol Thompson's Java 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 Java, Joe Gibbs' Dub Serial, Studio One's Dub Store Special, and Prince Buster's The Message Dubwise. Release dates, pressing information, altered track lists, and the informal nature of Jamaica's record business make the exact order difficult to prove. Some historians place Aquarius Dub first. Others treat Blackboard Jungle Dub as the first fully developed dub album because of its effects, structure, and atmosphere. The argument remains open. What is clear is how quickly the idea expanded. By the middle of the 1970s, dub was no longer limited to an instrumental B-side. It had become an album form. Augustus Pablo added another voice to the movement, born Horace Swaby. Pablo became closely associated with the melodica, a small keyboard instrument played by blowing air through a mouthpiece. In his hands, the melodica produced a thin, haunting tone. It floated above the bass and drums, like a distant horn. Pablo developed the rocker's sound and worked with King Tubby on one of dub's defining recordings, King Tubby Meets Rockers Uptown. The track was built from Jacob Miller's Baby I Love You So. Tubby transformed the rhythm through space, echo, bass, percussion, and fragments of Miller's voice. The vocal song and the dub were separate recordings, yet each helped explain the other. The dub did not erase the original. It revealed another world hidden inside it. The album King Tubby's Meets Rockers, Uptown, followed and became one of the form's lasting landmarks. Dub also changed during the rise of dancehall. By the late 1970s and early 1980s, new rhythms, new singers, and new DJs were reshaping Jamaican music. Hopeton Overton Brown, known as Scientist, became one of the era's most celebrated dub engineers. Scientists learned through King Tubby's studio and later became closely linked with recordings produced by Henry Junjo Laws and played by the Roots Radix. His mixes were sharp, spacious, and dramatic. Drums cracked through the silence. Bass lines moved with enormous weight. Vocals and instruments appeared as sudden flashes. Albums presented scientists in battles against vampires, space invaders, monsters, and other imaginary enemies. The titles and artwork gave Dub a visual mythology, while the recordings displayed his control of rhythm and effects. Prince Jammy, later known as King Jammy, also emerged from Tubby's circle. Jammy became an important dub mixer and producer before helping lead Jamaican music into the digital dancehall era during the 1980s. This transition showed dub's deeper effect on Jamaican music. Dub taught producers to treat rhythm as reusable material. One rhythm could support a singer, a DJ, an instrumentalist, and several dub mixes. Years later, the same rhythm might return with new performers. The recording was no longer a closed object. It was a foundation. During the 1980s, dedicated dub albums became less central inside Jamaica. Dance hall and digital production moved to the front of the industry. Dub did not disappear. Its methods moved into other forms. The practice of stripping songs down, reusing rhythms, emphasizing bass, and reshaping recorded material had become part of Jamaica's musical language. At the same time, dub was building a second life overseas. Jamaican migration had carried sound system culture to Britain. In British cities, sound systems became important spaces for Caribbean communities and a younger generation of Black Britons. Jah Shaka became one of the leading figures in British roots and dub culture. His sessions were known for heavy bass, spiritual themes, and intense sound system presentation. Dennis Bovell developed British reggae and dub through performance, production, and engineering. Mad Professor established the Aruwa label and carried dub into new recording environments. Adrian Sherwood and On You Sound connected dub methods with punk, post-punk, industrial music, and experimental production. Artists outside reggae began borrowing dub's central ideas. They removed instruments from mixes instead of adding more. They used echo as part of the composition. They treated bass as a leading voice. They created alternate versions instead of accepting one final recording. Dub's relationship with hip-hop is also significant. Jamaican toasting helped establish the idea of rhythmic speech over recorded music. Sound system culture placed the selector, microphone performer, speakers, and audience inside one live event. Hip-hop developed under its own social and musical conditions in New York, drawing from African-American, Caribbean, funk, disco, and other traditions. Jamaican sound system practices formed part of this larger ancestry. Dub studio methods traveled even farther. Remixing became a standard part of popular music. Dance records began appearing in extended versions. Producers separated vocals from rhythms. They rebuilt songs for clubs. They used delay, reverb, filtering, tape manipulation, sampling, and bass in ways dub engineers had explored years earlier. Traces of dub appeared in punk, post-punk, ambient music, house, techno, trip-hop, jungle, drum and bass, and later dubstep. Not every electronic genre came directly from dub. Still, the idea behind dub became universal. A finished recording did not need to remain finished. It could be opened. It could be stripped down. It could be rearranged. It could become several new recordings. King Tubby did not live to witness every branch of this influence. He was shot and killed in Kingston in February 1989. He was 48 years old. His death ended the life of one of Jamaica's greatest technical and musical minds. But it did not end his work. Every producer who drops a vocal out of a song and lets the bass take control is working inside a space Tubby helped define. Every remix built from the separate parts of an earlier recording carries part of dub's logic. Every echo allowed to become part of the rhythm points back toward those Kingston studios. Dub came from a particular place. It came from Jamaican dances, sound system rivalry, small studios, independent producers, engineers, musicians, singers, DJs, record shops, dub plates, speaker boxes, and communities with a deep understanding of rhythm. It was built through technical knowledge and musical instinct. The pioneers did not wait for perfect equipment. They learned every limitation of the machines available to them. Then they pushed those machines into territory their manufacturers had never expected. They turned mistakes into methods. They turned B-sides into an art form. They turned the mixing engineer into a performer. They turned silence into an instrument. Dub reggae is Jamaica's music of removal and return. The voice leaves, but its echo remains. The instruments disappear, but the rhythm continues. The original song breaks apart, and something new rises from inside it. Bass, drums, space, echo, dub,